Welcome to Account-Based Marketing. This podcast is designed as a collection of conversations with sales and marketing leaders, sharing thoughts and practical tips for becoming more customer-centric and accelerating revenue growth. Hosted by me, Alicia Linden, CEO at Momentum ITSMA, a global B2B growth consultancy and advisory firm. Welcome to this episode of Account-Based Marketing. Something we're always fascinated to dig into is the role of client marketing, particularly as it relates to marketing strategy. So today I'm thrilled to be joined by Charles Doyle, Chief Marketing Officer at Arup. Charles, welcome.
Thank you very much, Alicia. Glad to be with you.
Well, fantastic to have you with us, Charles. I know you've had a really rich career so far as Chief Marketing Officer at Arup, as well as several other organizations. Many of whom have been client-obsessed and incredibly client-centric. It'd be fantastic, Charles, if you kick us off with a bit about you and your career highlights as you see them so far.
So my career has been long and not uneventful. It's across seven companies or organizations. Three of the earliest ones were in high tech, I suppose you would say. The latter four, professional services. Mainly always marketing, but also strategy and communications, business development. A mix of industries and company types. So it's included governments, it's included global PLCs, private partnerships, and more recently an employee-owned firm. I've had four CMO roles, three of which are at group global level and one was divisional. I've also written a book. The themes are certainly business-to-business marketing communications, as I say, most intensively in professional services, which is a different set of disciplines. I've also worked in three continents, so I haven't just been in one country, US and Asia, as well as Western Europe.
Fantastic. Well, looking forward to tapping into your breadth of experience in this conversation, Charles. As you reflect back, you know, particularly thinking about the four CMO roles that you've had, has there been a particular moment in your career that's really shaped how you think about business strategy and your marketing leadership roles?
There's several. I think the defining one for my marketing world would certainly be the Accenture experience. More specifically, the reinvention of Accenture from Andersen Consulting, including the rebrand and all that that entailed and the speed with which we had to do that. And then the repositioning of Accenture, which is now one of the world's largest professional services firms. So that would be certainly all I learned about brand. Up to that point, I'd been doing services and product marketing and learning about segmentation and the techniques of marketing. That's where I really learned about the all-encompassing power of brand. Also where I developed some techniques, certainly the one you'd be interested in, of account-based marketing, recruitment marketing, developing also different ramifications of marketing. In terms of probably things that haven't gone so well, but mistakes or missteps are often good learning experiences. When I became the CMO of Clifford Chance, which at the time was one of the world's bigger law firms, I had come straight out of Accenture to be a sort of overall CMO. I was a divisional one at Accenture. And the mistake I think I made in retrospect was I thought I could reinvent Accenture in a law firm and structure it exactly because I thought Accenture had the perfect model and I could reimpose that without understanding the very odds quirky, bizarre culture of law firms and how impossible that was to do that. So as you become a CMO, the structuring of the team and the working of process between global and local and regional and service lines, that becomes almost a dominant factor that you don't learn on marketing courses. And I probably over-concentrated on structural items, you know, trying to reduce fragmentation there. So the learning from that is you cannot just reproduce one model from one firm that works, even if it's best practice in another culture. The other things that often change your perception is, again, tend not to be taught on courses, a change of CEO or chairman, you know, is outside your control, can often change the whole nature of things. But I would say the in-depth learning of the power and techniques of brand, which of course then parlay into every aspect of services marketing. That's probably been my biggest learning.
Charles, I think you've touched on a really fascinating point there, this idea of, you know, the operating model and, you know, how these organizations are structured, what's the context, what's the culture, and what's really going to drive impact. But are there some things that you've looked out for as you've navigated, and, you know, clearly that kind of Accenture Clifford Chance experience has been, you know, very indicative of some of the success you built. But are there signs that other marketing leaders could look for as they enter a new CMO position or enter a new marketing leadership position that you think would really help unlock the right marketing strategy for the operating model?
I'm speaking very much from a services marketing, professional services. This may not necessarily be true of product-centric companies. All marketing people in a service industry, especially professional services, will encounter the issue between the balance between unified, global, central, whatever phrase you use, and local, regional, both in terms of structure and in terms of process. There is no one right answer on this one, but getting the balance between what should naturally be done and implemented in a unified way, tend to use unified rather than central or global, versus or in addition to or an extension of what should be done locally. So you could break down the whole marketing mix into almost like circles. The important thing is to have it all done in the right strategic context, whatever the structure. But the biggest enemy of successful marketing in the B2B world, professional services, whatever the industry, is fragmentation. Fragmentation of effort, structure, mindset. It's the biggest enemy of marketing. So sometimes it's geographical. Sometimes it can be service. Sometimes it can be acquired companies being brought in. My firm JLL made 100 acquisitions while I was there. Trying to absorb that into a common brand and culture was very tricky. But the idea that one specific area can do things irrespective of the others in their own way, in the name of they know the local market better, is a very dangerous idea. However, you do have to have things done that are sensitive to local culture. So it's a constant balancing and dialogue and debate around that. And the world has shifted, you know, I saw it go from multinational to global. Now there's anti-globalization feelings in markets and constant move of structure. In terms of old-fashioned things like hierarchy and reporting, do regional marketing people report into a global CMO, or is it a kind of federation, or is it dual reporting, or do they not report at all? And it's run like franchise. All of these things a CMO has to tackle. Now, you can go on any marketing course that tends not to address those issues. You know, that's more about the techniques of external marketing. But I find that the higher up you go in marketing, those structural issues become very important. That's why I think, you know, which I know you're very interested, the client-centric approach to whatever you call it is a way of getting around that, because you then have to reflect the client's world and your own structure and overcome internal silos by putting the client at the center of your operations and world. Easier said than done, but that is maybe one of the uninvestigated aspects of client marketing or ABM, that it can actually help you overcome a siloed structure within your firm. You know, old school would have been the difference between marketing and sales, but also, do you reflect a geographically fragmented structure in how you approach a client? So we only deal with this client in America because that's where skills are, but we don't deal with them in China because we don't have an office there, you know, that sort of thing. So I think if you look at the client, doesn't really care what divisions you've got, what structures you've got, whether marketing's centralized or decentralized, they only care about the services and the benefits they get from dealing with you. These are always very difficult things because most professional services firms originated in a single geography and grew up, and most are multinational. They're not really global. They may have a few global processes, but it's very hard to become fully borderless, global, totally responsive to the client wherever they want to be dealt with, irrespective of geographical boundaries or internal silos. But if there is a way of doing that without totally throwing your structure up in the air, I think the client-centric approach is that.
Charles, I think you've kind of hit gold there, and you know, something that I'm certainly talking about a lot and hearing from lots of marketing leaders. Of, we think about so much of marketing, and so many marketing processes are designed for the job of doing marketing, particularly to the external world. And I loved how you put the concept of fragmentation on the table there, of this idea that the more fragmented you become, you know, the higher risk you run, but actually orientate yourself around clients. You introduced client marketing at Arup, and I know have spearheaded many client transformations in your role as Chief Marketing Officer. What does that actually look and feel like in terms of orientating marketing around clients? Is it about, like you just touched on there, geographic coverage and the partner model and how you're going to market as an organization? Is it really about the way your clients are buying? Are they themselves more decentralized? Are they procuring your service offering in a particular way, and therefore marketing is structured? What's your secret sauce in orientating marketing around the client?
If I go right back 20 odd years ago, at the very dawn of client marketing, and I think Accenture still calls it that, when we experimented with this, before it became the industry that, you know, you and
yes,
others
it
run.
Is now. Yeah.
And why did we get into it in the first place? Well, it was actually it's almost taking the microscope down another level from what we then called industry marketing. So when Accenture restructured to be more aligned with markets rather than geographies, first thing to do was create marketing for industry. So the pharmaceutical sector, the energy sector, the high-tech sector. And people would be recruited from those industries so that they would understand the dynamics, the language. It wasn't long before the limitations of that became evident. That, you know, firstly, once you step out in industry, your knowledge becomes a bit dated. Also, many clients are in multiple industries, especially big conglomerates, etc. Secondly, the idea, some of those clients were so big, you know, this was just entering the era of the big mega global conglomerate, that they themselves were marketplaces. The entire client could be seen as a marketplace that needed to be segmented, where you needed to position yourself. So that was the second thing, that an industry was almost too large a common denominator. Also, they were trying to get beyond the world of the winner-takes-all pitch to the client. You know, it was just a one-off transactional thing. It was important to understand, it tended to be when they did bid-win-loss analysis, they would see that those who had best knowledge of the client and didn't talk about themselves. I mean, this is all basic stuff now, but then it was quite new knowledge. You know, if you kept talking about how great you were and all your credentials, tended not to win the pitch. If you talked more about the client, what you could bring to them, that tended to work better. So immersion in the client's world, their language, their terminology, that was very, very important. Also, probably more selfishly, because Accenture moved from a geographic model to a market-orientated model, it was a way of bringing all of the services that Accenture provided to one client, rather than carving them up by internal geographical structures, which, you know, in Accenture, I don't know, you could attribute this only to client marketing, but when I was there, it was about 10 billion firm, now it's 40 plus. So it certainly was a growth engine. And, you know, then there was segmentations of clients. It also became a career option for individuals. It was an experiment when I was there. Now, I believe, you know, hundreds of people have carved out careers in it. And as you know, an industry has grown up teaching people how to do it, making methodologies and sequences. I mean, I'm not up to date where Accenture is on it today, but it's effectively become a standard piece of the marketing toolkit. You know, it would be very odd in a B2B not to have client marketing. When I have then gone to old-fashioned industries, law firms, or more recently, a very high-powered engineering consultancy, very high-tech and very modern in its thinking, but not necessarily in marketing. So there you're introducing it to something. So this is an organization that has no sales force as such, where the practitioners are actually doing the selling. They would not use that word selling, but they do the pitches. That seems to me to be ripe, you know, where they have they're more of a project orientation than a client mindset. So that was more introducing the concept of that. Arup had never done a client perception survey because they hadn't had to. They were such brilliant engineers. The work came in.
And so focused on the projects, I think that's...
So focused on the project, and the end result speaks for itself, and that becomes the selling point. And unlike most other services firms, they have a physical manifestation of their service, i.e. a bridge, a building, a stadium. Whereas if you're a management consultancy, you give advice, they take it, they leave it. But it's hard for you to leave a permanent memory. So engineering's interesting from that point. So that was more introducing it to a culture that was not sensitive to it, less commercially orientated. And historically, work has just come rolling in without really having to try. And the reputation is based on the end product or project rather than a sensitive approach to client relationship development. So very different ends of the spectrum. Accenture very, you know, lives or dies by client relationship, has no sort of physical manifestation of its service to the outside world. The other one does. And therefore, the idea of needing client marketing was less obvious.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you've painted a really good picture there of this shift that organizations need to go on. And it ties back into your first point around operating model, that those that are already selling cross-service line, you know, cross geographies focused on clients, where they'll be on that spectrum is very different to those that are organized by geography and possibly more project orientated than client orientated. Let's talk a little bit about, you've referenced the term account-based marketing, and you know, it's increasingly become a critical part both in professional services and more broader complex B2B sectors. You've been there since day one, and you're certainly keen to double click on some of the experience that you've had more broadly in client marketing. But what's your perception of where the market is today with account-based? You know, as a CMO, how are you thinking about this term, account-based marketing?
Well, I don't like the term account-based marketing. First thing, why don't I like that? I like the thinking and the mindset behind it. I don't like the phrase. Why don't I like the phrase? Why would you reduce something as sophisticated as a major client to the word account? It's the old-fashioned language of salesmen. So it's very reductive, slightly verging on the insulting to the client. Also, the mindset behind it is the main purpose of this is to extract as much revenue as you can on a sort of count-based, you know, as if you're doing that. So I think the reason for that, in its origins, it was seen as a bridge between marketing and sales. And the more you could use salesman's language, you know, they wouldn't just see marketing as bag carriers. They would see them as an integral part of the sales process. I think that was the main reasons. So it's reductive, it's transactional, it sort of diminishes the complexity of what it is. It's a terminology. As a phrase, you can change it. I think others say client marketing or customer marketing, whatever. It's more about the mindset behind it. If it's just seen as a more sophisticated way of selling or a modern way of selling, and I get worried when I see it applied in product marketing, you know, what do you call it, many-to-many, or, you know, when it's seen as a set of little learned techniques just to sell more stuff, you know, that's where...
Creepy personalization to get a few more clicks, yeah.
I mean, what it really should be, and I think where... when it's done at its very best, it's about identifying where there's mutual benefit between the clients and collaborating to get that mutual benefit. To get to that point, though, you need to do very deep research and immerse yourself in the client's world. So I think with client marketing, you should be edging more towards a total collaboration, almost sort of a merger of interests, rather than how much can I get from my account. Which I think, in its worst examples, that's what it is.
Love it. I mean, so you're saying it has to be a mindset. The word account can end up becoming quite transactional. You've got to create a win-win.
It just becomes like old-fashioned selling with more sophisticated clothes. The personal selling is dying, you know, in its old-fashioned format. Again, I'm not so familiar with how ABM is used for product marketing. But in its origins, it was very intimate, what you would call one-to-one or one-to-few. And it wasn't quite as mechanized as the seven steps, you know, and methodologies that I've seen on various training courses. But the idea behind it is good. I just get worried sometimes it's become more focused just on revenue extraction And the two other R's, you know, relationship and reputation building. The other part, I think, in terms of where it's going, obviously it's got widespread appeal because of the revenue part, and it shows that marketing can play an active role in growing revenues without being sales. The reputational part, building brand perception at the level of individual client, very, very important. And this is way more sophisticated than just old-fashioned client satisfaction results or bid win loss analysis. Brand building now is so complex, and the days when you could just push out your brand through advertising are gone. You almost have to build it person by person, mindset by mindset, position in the mind of the individual clients, even within the client, you know, hundreds of individuals who together form some view of you. And without that, the relationship bit and the revenue doesn't come. And I think the industry sort of got that wrong by overemphasizing, let's get as much revenue as can by taking as many services to this client as we can. Yes, that's very important. But I think the other steps of the reputation and the relationship also very important, especially in professional services, maybe less so in product, whether, you know, the product builds a reputation.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Whilst listening, please hit follow or subscribe on your podcast platform to get access to our full library of recordings and alerts of all new episodes. As you're thinking about brand and reputation building more broadly across client marketing, how have you been successful? How have you thought about it? You touched there a little bit on client reputation studies. You know, not just here's another advert and here's how we're positioned, but really appealing to these complex B2B buyers in a way that is enhancing reputation.
A few things. Again, the difficulty in brand building and professional services is because the service is usually consumed at the point of execution. Therefore, how do you leave an abiding memory of what your brand is with them beyond trinkets and merchandise? That has tended to come down to ideas and content, and sharing of those ideas and content in a non-commercial way, which may even be just learning from the project and taking it to another project. So the more and more the idea of sharing your knowledge, sharing your techniques on a non-commercial basis become very important. I mean, I once charted from the organization you've acquired a sort of four-stage development of B2B marketing since its inception in the 90s. Marketing stroke brand. In the 90s, and Anderson Consulting, IBM were sort of ahead in this, the only model for building a brand was taken from consumer goods. So it was TV advertising, airports, print. In the early days of the internet, were just used as simply publication tools. Old-fashioned PR, get stories, get editorial. Basically, they took the tools of product or consumer marketing and applied it to B2B. And if you got in early, you could make a big advance. The age of social media made that more difficult. So then we entered the age of interactive marketing, where you have dialogues with the clients. The clients determine what your brand is, and you had to survey them and work out. And then we get into the more authentic age, you know, where there's no point in just push messages out saying, we are great buyers. You now had to show your authentic best face, content, purposes and causes, etc. started to play in more and more in terms of, you had to stand for something. Couldn't just be pushing your services. So you had to have higher causes, which again, some of them were risible and some of them were genuine. The age we're entering now is, I think, the one of collaboration, where naked competition, winner takes all bidding, where you actually give away stuff and get stuff on a non-commercial basis, and you both mutually rise through that. I think that's the way it's going. And as I said, I think brand now has to be built individual by individual. You know, I almost think B2B should change its name to H2H, human to human, because businesses don't have personalities or buying groups. It's thousands of human beings with all different perceptions, and they change constantly. AI and all these tools will give us the ability to personalize to the individual level, but within a context of what you need your brand to stand for. These days, I think unless you can bring that level of personalization and relevant content and deep understanding of the client, unless you can collaborate and be seen to be collaborating for non-commercial reasons with them, it's going to be very difficult to build a brand. There's, with fragmentation of media, you can't even get to them in the old-fashioned way. So no one's really got the new formula yet. But I do think post-COVID, it's about mutuality of benefit. So the days of old school selling are dying away. The other one is the internal culture. And again, another new dimension of any CMO's role is understanding the internal culture and developing that culture. And that has to be very much symmetrical with what you're saying externally. Because in professional services, it's as important to market on the supply side as on the demand side. What I mean by that is you're largely only the sum of the talents and expertise applied of your people. Therefore, you have to be a magnet for talent. Therefore, marketing techniques have to be applied as much on the people attraction side as on the client. These days, you will not build a brand unless you're allied to some higher purpose, which has to be authentic. Increasingly, those causes are environmental, planetary, sustainable development, social equity, and you will not attract young people unless you have some cause like that.
How has this evolution impacted your own career?
Well, I now see it as an integral part of the marketing mix. So when you're structuring a marketing team or a department, I'm surprised if it's not there. In the way that you would look for in the past PR or product marketing or advertising or something, client marketing, although it's constantly evolving, has also become a business as usual operational necessity of any firm. That's when I would really get surprised if I don't see it in some form and immediately would introduce it. So it would be part of my managerial toolkit to introduce it and all the training and development that goes behind it. And also pointing out to people the career opportunities that now lie within it, which 20 years ago there was only a career. Yeah. So as you know, it's got multi-segments and it can be applied in all sorts of different ways. So that would be one thing. The idea, the wider idea of, I think, which is originally a Drucker idea, of making the client the center of your organization and circling it, you know, with all the processes. That's a harder one, and that therefore takes marketing into a wider strategic context. But I think if you begin with that in circle and the client's world and the client's context, so it can't just be the buying unit. You know, it used to be let's identify the buying unit within the client. Now it has to be what's influencing the client, which is increasingly social, their own supply chain, their client base, their competition, their finances, their shareholder. You have to understand that whole world. So branding, building your brand, growing your business, become hugely much more complex than the old way you could sort of, with good resources, just bludgeon your way into market share.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. Make your clients your world. And that's a great framing of thinking about this. You've talked about a couple of themes of, you know, this account orientation, this kind of transactional focus on it's all about near-term revenue. You used the word personalization earlier as well. What would your advice be to marketing leaders who have perhaps bought into the idea, the very premise of client marketing, of creating this sustained growth, then this win-win, collaborating more effectively with their clients, and as an organization it's become more transactional and more functional? How would you ladder back up to what this should all be about?
If you think the three big trends in the 20th century going into the 21st century, the rise of client or customer power, so they call the shots, the days when you could, the producer could tell them what's what, gone. There's still some aspects to it. Second one, expansion of choice. So clients have multiple choices and the internet brings them even more choice. So if you're not doing this more sophisticated approach, someone else will be. So you'll look competitively disadvantaged. Third one is self-serve. Increasingly, people want to be enabled to do it themselves. You think of all the things we do ourselves. We buy our own stock, buy our own insurance, we sort our own travel, things that used to require an assistant. We do all of it. So those three trends will continue. The one that's still missing, I think, and which now all these technologies like AI enable, is personalization is still very clunky. You know, look at even the earliest forms of uses of AI for customer service. Still very common. The idea when AI can anticipate your personal needs and requirements or organizational, speak to you in your language ahead of you even thinking it through yourselves. You know, when you've thought all through, you put it out to a pitch and people come and fight out on price and benefits. The more you can personalize your content, your offer, the relevance of what you're doing, using all the tools, using all the data, you know, that didn't exist 20 years ago. I think that's where the advantage is. So good to continue that the customer, the client's got all the power. They want expanded choice. They want to be able to self-deliver it in some way, but they don't feel it's personalized. If there's one little nugget from the client-centric mix, I would emphasize the more and more you can personalize something, make it really relevant, their language, their metrics, their context, right down to the individual level. That's, I think, where the differentiators are. Just nowadays, just knowing a lot about the client, talking their language, used to be a differentiator. Now it's 10 a penny. It's knowing what you're thinking about next before you've thought about it yourself. You know, or anticipating needs. You know, the great thing about marketing, meeting unmet needs that people haven't yet thought. Now we have great tools to help us with that. They're not yet fully direct. But nothing gets around doing deep research. You know, whether you do it through AI or you do it through desk research or some other, or you cannot do proper client marketing without deep research.
Well, I think interesting point that I often see is research gets commoditized, and this idea of actually we can do research simpler, or we can do it just by aggregating lots of information, and research is in many ways cheap and available, but actually the process of going through and doing this deep research is you're walking in the client's shoes. And then that is where a lot of the magic, I think, often gets missed.
Well, again, client marketing would assume people are in constant contact and feeding that back that research. Not like spies, but you create a sort of human intelligence that you wouldn't get from secondary or primary sources. And the client appreciates that, I think, that you've taken the time to understand. I mean, they don't want you spying in their personal life or anything, but they do appreciate time spent.
As you're reflecting on, you know, starting out client marketing at Arup, you've obviously brought a wealth of experience in your journey at Arup so far. What advice would you give yourself if you were having another run of establishing client marketing in a professional services business? What would you do differently?
Probably the thing that I haven't done so well is I haven't spent enough time understanding the culture of how they make decisions. So I have certain models in my mind that I believe work. You know, I believe in the master brand. I believe in the integrated approach. I'm a big believer in client marketing. Second part of that is how do you activate that? You know, you can't make the assumption people will get it. It seems so simple to me. But understanding of the culture of how a decision gets discussed, how mandates get created, very, very different from company to company. And whilst you want to make an immediate impact and get things going and you see all 20 things that are wrong, I have never spent enough time studying that world, which is its psychology, it's company psychology, it's culture, it's history of the company. Things that, you know, you're fearful that if you don't make an instant impact, 100-day plans, etc., you want to hit the ground running. I have found that I've come awry in some cases by not fully understanding the culture. And when you've moved across 7 companies, multiple cultures like I have, although you gain a sort of rapidity of understanding culture, still everyone is very different. Even in the same industry, they're very different. Try and link marketing to the strategy of the business as an enabler of that. Try to present it and the individuals within it as professionals rather than tacticians. And I think it's also, you know, figure out what are the all-encompassing things. Very, very difficult for any firm to argue they don't want to serve customers well and have a good brand. So you can always start with these hardy perennials. What kind of brand do we have? And you need to look out for when it becomes personal anecdotes, and I think it is this, and I think it is that. And then what does the world think? So these are always good solid tools that no firm really understands. The other thing is always to be on the lookout for the addiction most firms have to silos and fragmentations. Marketeers can often be the joiners or the joiners of dots. You know, there will always be silos, but you can help unify and make them more than they are individually.
Great, the bridge. I think fantastic pieces of advice there, particularly as organizations are setting up client marketing or looking to do a reset, you know, this idea of get on with the fabric of the organization, how are decisions made, you know, take a step back, make sure that you're not just going down this kind of one-to-one, one-to-few, whatever the kind of gibberish may be on accounts, but take the highest ground and link it back to your organization strategy. And then that third point you made about serving customers well, like, you know, all businesses, that's what it comes down to. Are you meeting client needs and how are you serving those needs? So as marketing leaders, let's not lose sight of that. Really fantastic advice. I've loved the conversation and I just feel like we're scratching the surface, Charles, of your fascinating experience and the career that you've built to this point. Just in closing, would love to get your take of what are you most looking forward to? I mean, the B2B marketing has come tremendous way. You referenced a few models and levels of maturity in this conversation. What's next? What's keeping you up at night? What's keeping you excited and engaged in B2B?
I think that young people joining marketing in the firm, especially in certain cultures where it's been viewed as not as a profession, I think I'm optimistic that people entering marketing can't see it as a profession. It doesn't have the traditional accreditations, etc., that accountancy or law has. But I think it's a very, very good time to be entering this because it's so multidimensional. As many other things are becoming very narrow. B2B, I think, is possibly one of the more complex. Mass marketing has its complexities too, but I think the B2B brings in all sorts of exciting things if you include the higher purposes, the psychology of individuals, the need to market on the demand and supply sites. Now, increasingly, you have to look at supply chains. It's a fascinating, multivarious. There's no one package that works for everyone. You have to be endlessly curious and ambitious, and it's changing all the time. And you're always on the cutting edge of technology, of society. You're dealing with big issues. I can't think of anything else that gives you such variety. Sure, there are frustrations, but I think it's now entering a phase where people no longer feel they're a support service or they're second class or they're somebody else's enable. This has got a major strategic role, but it all begins about where does the influence and the money comes from the client. So I think, you know, like what you're doing is absolutely changing the nature of the profession. It's helped bridge the old-fashioned gap between marketing and sales. You know, they certainly existed in the early part of my career, but it's constantly evolving and it's drawing in other disciplines. You need to understand finance. You need to understand human psychology. You have to understand recruitment. You have to understand geopolitics, market segmentation, all of those things. Very difficult to keep up with. I think that's a good thing because it doesn't get stale.
Yeah, no, restless. You've got to keep moving. Yeah. Lots to look forward to, and I feel like you almost sold the role of marketing there, particularly as you've shaped it as the profession that it should be, and all of the exciting opportunities and problem solving creativity that needs to come with some of these dimensions you've touched on. Charles, it's been an absolute honor to have had you on the podcast. I really appreciate you candidly sharing what's worked brilliantly for you, but also some of the learning points along the way, and look forward to welcoming you back onto the podcast to dig in deeper into some of these topics in the future.
Thanks, Elisa. Thanks for inviting me, and best luck to you, your team, and all your subscribers and clients.
Thank you, Charles.
This podcast is brought to you by Momentum ITSMA, a leading B2B growth consultancy and pioneers of account-based marketing. Learn more at momentumitsma.com.